Chapter 12. My Lovely Mrs. Cathy. July 2018 now, and I'm at the London Passport Office. Have you ever had to call your doctor from the London Passport Office? Security tried to escort me from the building, but I wasn't leaving without my passport. It was therefore my passport that said Miss Leah Rowe with the letter F, and a disheveled-looking photo of myself. I had all my documents that I needed, even a letter from my doctor where I forgot the doctor's signature. Whoops. The doctor faxed a new copy of the document with his signature on it, while security asked why I was just loitering in the lobby. If I wanted to bomb them, I wouldn't exactly hang around, would I? I just wanted my fucking passport. The man at the desk explained it to them. Yes, all sorted. The passport arrived at my home the next day. It was July 2018. I'd absolutely failed to raise money for surgery and had to beg on the internet. Fortunately, I had been leading a highly popular cult called the Libreroot Project for 5 years, so multiple Libreroot fans sent me thousands of US dollars at a time, and I raised about 20,000 US dollars in a week, all sorted. One of them was someone who'd begun their own gender transition inspired by mine. $5,000. I did thank them, though I took it in stride that I could count on their support. It had been my experience at that point that I'd always had an angel to take care of me. There was always someone, and I had no problem asking for help. The Libreboot committee was furious that I'd abused the Libreboot's infrastructure for this purpose, but they agreed reluctantly to allow it, on condition that it be worded perfectly. I needed them to stay in the project, so I did submit to their review, and the text of my campaign also went through several drafts. It was published directly on the Libreboot website, where I knew it would be seen. That's why I posted it there, and I provided a payment link. My parents ate with me on the day I left at the airport. They had driven me there, and I was completely calm the whole time. Of course, they themselves were terrified, and my mother told me years later that she'd cried the moment I left her sight through the ticket gate. I didn't want to take her with me for precisely that reason. Being in Thailand on my own meant that I had freedom. I liked being alone, you see. I was having gender reassignment surgery in a foreign country, the country of Thailand. I was going to have a vagina. It all felt completely fake. Thailand felt fake upon landing, like everything was a prop in a TV studio. But that could have been the 48 hours of no sleep talking. A man from the clinic had my name on a sign at the airport. We visited psychiatrists, lawyers, physicians, and I signed about 50 disclaimers. Totally worth it. Perfect health. I had abused my body for a full year to reach 80 kilograms, perfect blood pressure, athlete-level resting heart rate, and the nurse even asked me how much I work out. I had superhuman health. The irony is that I was excited about the exercise gym available at the hotel that I'd be staying at. I'd seen photos of it and imagined myself using it each morning. Then the clinic, where several patients hugged me. Such was the camaraderie of this place, by design, to ensure that those going through such absolutely mental recovery would not be lonely. I went to the hotel and slept for a glorious 18 hours. My hotel was extremely old-fashioned, like what you'd see in an old 007 film. A large round hall as you entered, with lush flora and fauna. A man was always in the center of the hall, playing music on a large piano, surrounded by flowers. I was greeted at reception with a glass of sugarcane juice. The receptionist seemed unimpressed when I simply downed the lot and walked away. I was knackered and I needed sleep. A no durians sign was present next to the no smoking signs. 2,000 baht for 2,000 baht fine for smelly fruits. Bloody sheets were tolerated. The hotel was used by the clinic, reserving an entire floor for patients, and nurses had access to the rooms. This was so that they could monitor us daily after initial recovery in the nearby hospital. The clinic keeps patients there for a month after surgery, and their aftercare was world-renowned. The heat and humidity there was unbearable, unlike anything I'd ever known. It felt like breathing warm water, and it even had a smell. The city also smelled, a sweaty, oily, heat smell. I would learn to love it, and even miss it, after I left. The next day, I would get to know some patients. There was a downstairs breakfast area, and I would go to the clinic next. At the clinic, my surgeon seemed quite enthusiastic about the fact that I had excellent elasticity. He was actually smiling. His apprentice was nodding. I'd never known anyone to be this happy about my genitalia before, but I suppose it made sense. He estimated that I would have a depth of roughly 8 inches, which was very good. I was then immediately taken to the hospital, it being lunchtime, and I would also eat lunch there all that day. My room was just like another hotel room, and it even had an extra area for a visitor to sleep in. Some patients came with parents or lovers, but I was there alone as I couldn't afford to bring anyone anyway. I didn't want to bring anyone with me anyway. Surgery came the next day at the hospital. I noted how modern it felt inside, and there were a lot of screens everywhere to help guide you, like the Starship Enterprise. Not that I really needed help, I mean, the clinic took care of me. The food was awful, especially for vegans. I was a vegan at that time. I quickly switched to meats. Even that was absolute slop, nutritional slop. I wasn't allowed to eat it anyway after about 10 o'clock at night. A nurse came in and cleaned my bowels with an enema, watching me pissing out of my arse several times. The nurse also shaved every single hair of my genitalia. For some reason, I also masturbated afterwards. One last time, I suppose. Then I went to sleep. I just went to sleep. I woke up feeling full of life. It was important that I get a good night's sleep. They ordered me to piss and then shower immediately. These people wasted no time. A team of male nurses, who all looked like they went to the gym a lot themselves, then entered my room and wheeled me to an operational theatre. I met eyes with another patient that I'd seen the day before, but we did not speak each other's language. She simply smiled at me. A beautiful Japanese lady, roughly my age, mid-20s then. She had a large entourage with her, and she seemed to come from some wealth. A lot of the patients there were incredibly wealthy. I didn't really feel like an imposter because I'd paid for it, you know, I deserved to be there, and I just found it funny given how I'd funded my trip. I was mildly disappointed that I could not speak to her, because I just wished I could understand Japanese. The nurses all spoke to me as they and all of the assistants prepared. My surgeon and his assistant both spoke to me, reassuring me that I was in safe hands. I wasn't worried. I'd done my research. I knew that my surgeon was the best. All I remember was how white the room was and how many electrical sockets were present on a large tower in the center of the room, containing all of the tools that were about to cut me open. I was both blissful and thankful. I quietly spoke to one of the nurses, completely calm. Although I don't remember the topic, my anaesthetist would soon stand over me and to ask whether I was ready. I said, "Surprise me." I continued speaking with the nurse, who smiled at me and even laughed at my jokes. I then heard the following words, "Sharp scratch." I only remember thanking them in this moment. Moments later, I was being wheeled down the hall, the lights dimmer this time, not quite sure what had happened, as I had only just spoken to the lovely nurse. We were moving at what seemed like high speed, and everything was a total blur. I heard chatter in the background, and then a blurry blob resembling my surgeon wearing a white mask was staring down at me, and he uttered the following words, "Your operation was a success, and there were no complications." The next week was a total blur. I slept a lot. I mostly just watched cartoons while awake on my laptop. I spoke to my mother a lot. She did not need to know how awful the food was at that hospital. She mostly just wanted to know how I was doing. I said, "Yeah, I'm doing fine. Mostly a lot of pain, but, you know, I was fine." I published a photo of myself and a message of thanks to the Libreboot websites. The Libreboot committee no longer concerned me, because now I had what I wanted. No, now I wanted something far more important. 2 days post-op, I crossed the room for the kettle. Every stitch felt ready to burst, but I was adamant that I would have not one, but two cups of coffee. The nurse laughed, but also told me that I should never, ever do that again. She took away the coffee. At no point had I even considered how unsafe my caffeinated adventure could possibly be in what was 3 meters across a small room. One boring, painful week later, Mrs. Cathy came out and I pissed blood. Kathy was an evil fucking bitch. My bride from hell. Back in she went, and then I left the hospital. I pissed into Kathy for weeks. Kathy sucks. I later figured out that I could hide her in my handbag with the tube rooted through my dress. This enabled me some level of dignity to walk around without her being seen. That evil bag. A patient cried one night because someone she loved had died back at home. Everyone around her comforted her as my soup went cold, and I went back to my room, devastated. I loved my hotel room. It was the cheapest room available. It had a large double bed and a very respectable shower with a broken nozzle that hurt every time I used it. It did have a fridge. Everything except the mattress was made of wood. There was an old 20-inch cathode ray tube television with an analog aerial. I would arrange everything so that it was all within reach, and a nurse visited me every day. She would occasionally annoy me by moving everything so that I'd have to arrange everything again. I also befriended the cleaning lady. She showed me some photos of her home. The room was dead silent at night, and I'd blast my Chinese TV all night, or watch Archer on my laptop, sometimes Sailor Moon. I would occasionally invite other patients to relax with me as I entertained them. One night, I was explaining to my guests, how the cathode ray tube television in my room works, and I was high on all the painkillers. I was half naked in my pajamas as they ate some of my leftover pizza. The air conditioning had malfunctioned, and I sweated as a makeshift fan was running. I was determined to explain exactly how an electron gun works. Kathy enjoyed my lecture. I sometimes abused the sleeping pills they gave me, taking far more than I should, along with the other drugs. Mixed with alcohol, I sometimes woke up in paralysis. In this state, the room appeared like I was submerged in water, and I could not feel my body weight. My eyes felt as though I could float around the room. It was a state of pure thought, fully awake, while I also felt my dreams. Dead skin fell out of my vagina one day. Kathy stayed in, of course, the bitch that she is, but I had the last laugh. Kathy came out a few weeks later, a week before I left. I was terrified because she fell out of me while I sat on the toilet. The nurse, who I had called frantically on the phone, told me that I should just piss, after I'd freaked out 1,000 times. Pissing with a vagina for the first time is wonderful. It's almost like telekinesis. I just think, and it comes out. Total inner peace. I just felt like I had little Leah my entire life. That's what I called her. This was actually the third time Kathy came out. The second time, I still couldn't piss. Still no blood, but having her put back in me hurt like a bitch. Delirious, I asked my clinic friend, who'd also had her own Kathy, to sing the Soviet Union national anthem in Klingon. She did. I laughed so hard that the nurse couldn't even find my urethra, and I had to be physically restrained. Fuck Kathy. I annoyed one of the nurses. We were in a class at the clinic being told how to insert dilators into our vaginas. I ranted endlessly on a Discord channel set up by the clinic patients about the wonders of communism and why they were all entitled yuppies, how they simply took their new bodies for granted. At one point, being told the dynamic dilation technique by the nurse commented that they would never allow such things in China because they're communists, and this fact had come up for some reason. My eyebrows twitched. I told the nurse that China is awesome. A patient, the one who'd banned me from the Discord channel, in the room visibly sighed, and nobody dared question my logic. I'd been watching far too much CCTV4, the Chinese daily TV channel, which was available for some reason on my CRT TV. I once watched a documentary about Mao during the revolution of 1949, and it basically made him look like Jesus. You know, he'd show up in a manic scene and light his cigarette, everything fixed, you know, as he sips his tea, smiling with everyone. Mao was incredibly based, apparently. I was banned from the Discord server because I'd mixed tramadol with rum one night, while I was also taking my SSRIs that I was on at the time. All three of these mixed caused a certain high in my brain that made me extremely insane. I cannot describe in words just how insane I was. Just a stream of consciousness, and I don't even remember what I said, but it was infamous the next day. Nobody told me what I even said, but some patients avoided me after that. I thoroughly enjoyed their indignation as they literally sat on the other side of the room, away from my group, during breakfast. A few friends and a few weeks later, I would travel back to the UK. For now, though, I wanted to enjoy myself. The patients I met were nice, and I still remember all of their names. I don't normally care much for people, but I was trapped in that hellhole for a month, so I decided I may as well make friends. I played Mortal Kombat with one of them on my LibreBoot ThinkPad with a PlayStation emulator. We also ate pizza one night in my room, and we occasionally went to restaurants. Kathy shared drinks with me, and I emptied her into one of the available squatters that night. And it was just like being back in school, really. I mean, most of my peers, they were entitled yuppie bitches who I obviously didn't much care for, and there were even cliques, just like in school. You know, my group consisted of myself, an Australian, one American, and one British, who were all very nice. And I was also in the group. And there was also a group of French patients who constantly talked about their wealth and seemed to think that they were better than everyone else. They often tried to control everyone around them, including my American friends. They never stepped one foot near me, sensing my utter disdain, which I made no effort to hide. My American friend actually called me a bitch repellent. This is how we became friends. I did like the American lady the most. She was a complete normie, you know, she was just a normal person, but she respected my quirks, as she'd known people like me before. And for some reason, I just liked her. You know, we went out one day to a nearby shop, and I showed her my butt pack. The cushion, allow me to explain, the cushion that the gender clinic gave us, a special cushion that we could sit on to alleviate pain. And I reasoned at the time, if I tied it to my rucksack, I could then lower the rucksack wherever I wanted, just lower my rucksack slightly and immediately sit. I could also use this to kneel, for example, when shopping, if I needed to kneel down in a shop. This was among several other examples, plus an explanation of my professional life that led my American friend to tell me just how clever and resourceful I am, improvising even the most insanely mundane things like this. My lovely American friends, yes, absolutely normal woman, but she somehow felt pleasant and she always smiled at me. Not a threat in any sense of the word, you know, she was just nice, and she was also one of the people who enjoyed my lecture that day about the cathode ray tube. It wasn't all fun and games. As my American friend put it, you know, this was business. This was no holiday. Painful business, and we would all have our own bad days. My American friend once couldn't walk back to her room after dinner, but I was feeling up for it. You know, I helped her back to her room. I knocked the door for her, and then I just left and went downstairs. My other friends were eating downstairs. I remember having that same neutrality on my face, though, you know, while I was walking my friend to her room. Like when I visited my Dutch friend in 2015. I remember having another thought in my mind at the time, seeing my doped-out friend as she passed out on the bed. I thought nothing of it and simply left the room to continue eating. She was very pretty, and I didn't see her until the next day. Business indeed. I would often wake up with bloody sheets, sometimes piss stains. I sometimes couldn't even get myself out of bed. I often couldn't sleep through all the pain, dilating 3 times a day through extreme pain. We just had to keep doing it. We had to shower 3 times daily, but I couldn't stand for more than a minute sometimes before feeling like I'd pass out. Going to the clinic felt like a marathon, despite only being around the corner. My seat cushion helps, but even sitting was painful. Changing into a new pair of socks was the worst thing ever. The things you take for granted that are now just cause abject pain. Everything hurts at all times. I once lay on the clinic sofa crying because I just couldn't move. I was sitting with my laptop playing games on old games on some emulators, and I just wanted to go out and buy snacks. A former patient who volunteered there at the clinic drove me in a car to a nearby corner shop. I just bought whatever I wanted. They dragged me crying to my hotel room afterwards. I think they were annoyed with me because they just walked away, and I never spoke to them really again after that. Several other people also went to this person's house because they had loads of games and films and stuff, because they lived just around the corner from the clinic. Similar happens once when we ate as a group at a restaurant around the corner from the hotel. The food was nice and I had a good time, but I'd overdone it and I just couldn't walk back. You know, I was walking in and I was taken in both arms by 2 other people, patients themselves, while I cried the whole way. I didn't respect the hotel staff at all. I would often order food, usually with at least 2 glasses of rum and Coke, to my hotel room each night. Mixing alcohol and tramadol made me loopy, which led to a rather infamous scene in the chat room that I previously mentioned. Just an absolute surreal stream of consciousness. It felt great. I was me the whole time, and I had no inhibitions whatsoever. I did not control my thoughts at all during that time. I was generally much looser, especially verbally. This is part of why my American friend liked me, you know, because I just turned the charm on the whole time. You know, I was quite intense, even when this would sometimes land me in trouble with some other people in the group. But I was also a bit eccentric. I did a whole 2-hour video once put it up on my blog, showing how to dilate. And you know, I've got my vagina and everything, and I'm just cleaning, washing, dilating, cleaning. I watched an episode of Archer. And I'm heard laughing in the video and I show with bloody sheets afterwards, because if you laugh while dilating, it causes you to like tense up, and blood comes out on my bloody bed sheets that I called my blood blankets at the time. Long story. I made up stories too. For some reason, I told one of the clinic patients that I work for the post office. I don't know why. I told another patient that I'd once survived a 70-mile-per-hour head-on traffic collision unscathed, and she believed it. She told me God wasn't ready for me that day. I expressed extreme opinions, often quite edgy ones. I didn't really believe them, but, you know, that this made people uncomfortable. Like, for example, the idea that communism was the best possible political system in a hotel full of rich yuppies, or that heroin is harmless. I don't condone drug taking, but again, I was being edgy. You know, I was just being really vulgar all the time. I think the people in my group liked it, or maybe they were just taking the piss out of me behind my back, but I didn't really care. You know, I was just manic the whole time. I was paying all the drugs they gave me, and, you know, I was in pain. So I just made. But, you know, I knew I wouldn't see them again after that anyway, so who cared? They were sort of like single-serving flat friends, you know, like in the film. You know, the one, that film. Single-serving flat friends. Single-serving hotel friends, I suppose. I didn't really care what they thought of me, because, you know, I thought I'd never see them again after a few weeks. I just had to survive them until I left. Some of my friends were a little bit nuts too, like the French women. I went to their room once. They were having a sleepover or something, completely childish, and they had one of the nicer rooms, bitches. I felt completely outcast, and I felt like they were also quite dull, like just intellectually dull. The Australian from my group, lovely girl, by the way, she was there. She was lonely though, and so she invited me. I don't think the other people in the room wanted me there, because like they didn't talk to me or anything. For some reason though, I had been invited. I suspected that the French ladies were soliciting other patients for sex. They could tell, obviously, that I wasn't very interested, if that was the case. Extremely dangerous as well, because, like, you can break a million stitches doing that. But, you know, my Australian friend was 18 at the time. Her grandmother was back in her room, sleeping. You know, she'd come to the clinic with her. So she was just there alone in that room. We all bunched up in bed. We were just, like, you know, laying around chatting and just relaxing. I was in bed, like, with a bag of piss next to me, and the 18-year-old Australian climbed on top of me. "Hello there," I said, smiling. She didn't seem to mind the bag of piss next to me. My very British defence had deterred what was clearly sexual assault, as her face was in mine. She climbed off. I didn't really think of it afterwards, you know, just a cute, horny Australian. She was a little bit psycho as well, which is exactly why I liked her, especially up close. She also just had a really nice hybrid Australian-Vietnamese accent, which just made her even cooler. I continued eating breakfast with her each morning. No need to report the incidents. I told her later that I wasn't really into her, but she had no trouble correcting me. She had apparently felt my erection. She told me so plainly, while staring at me and maintaining eye contact. This wasn't even the strangest thing that happened. Yeah, this wasn't even the strangest thing that happens. Like, a lot of patients there were just completely nuts. Just, like, one of them got higher and tried to jump off a roof, for instance. I found it curious because they cancelled her surgery because of it. She had to go home. What happened was the French ladies, yes, had given her hallucinogenic drugs to calm her down, but she ended up having an extremely violent trip. They were also generally just scaring the lady. I never saw it happen, but I did imagine it. I actually found it mildly funny, but although I remained extremely polite to my American friends who told me the story, telling her just how awful it all sounded. Normal woman, do not offend the lovely American lady, I thought. I was a mess, though, the whole time, and I would often just lash out at people in pain. The nurses often became annoyed with me. I was just extremely pedantic all the time. I pissed off a lot of people. I just didn't like not being in control of myself. A new American arrived shortly before I left, and I told her what she had in store for her. "Why are you trying to scare me?" she asked. "Us girls got to sit together," I said. I just didn't like her. You know, she was a professional athlete, she was very rich, and she had that same entitled attitude as most of the other patients. You know, she just talked down to everyone, like everyone owed her everything. You know, it was like, come on. The American and British lady in my group liked my rants, apparently. They thought I was cool. The ladies in my group weren't rich. They were normal like me. You know, they just lived actual real lives. So I was the one in the group who said what no one else would. Bit repellents, in other words. One of the yuppies invaded the sanctity of our group and bragged about her wealth again. Her husband was with her too, and also apparently rich, some stupid insurance broker in New York. This stupid bitch actually kept telling us about her house, her car, and ugh. She had the most annoying voice too, an absolutely insufferable woman who had no problem telling me how to live my life. She sucked all of the energy out of the room, and I'm sure everyone else hated her as much as I did. The bitch actually entered my room once to wake me up. That my room, my door was unlocked, and she just assumed permission. I wondered how much damage I could do to her for such a brutal intrusion into my sanctuary, waking up groggy, looking at her, but I was late for my clinic appointment, so a good thing she woke me. I forgot about it shortly thereafter, but I did have to keep tolerating her. She infuriated me in the downstairs dim sum restaurant. I'd spent an entire evening the previous night watching videos about how to eat it properly, and with the correct etiquettes, the bitch asked for a fork. I wanted to shove it in her eye. Her husband was even worse, a very stupid New Yorker who himself complained, yes he did, about the squatters, and how the bathrooms were always wet. Yes, wear the slippers they give you, I thought. Oh, you don't like taking your shoes off when you enter a 7-Eleven convenience store? Well, fuck off back to America then, you stupid pig. But I held my tongue. Most of the days there were quite boring, though. We were all in extreme pain, recovering in our rooms, and we all slept a lot. I was no exception. I would often have days where no one was awake, and I just eat alone downstairs. I'd just go on my computer all day. You know, the dilation schedule itself was brutal. 1 hour, and you have to insert a hard, straight dildo-shaped object into an open wound, holding it there. After a while, we were also instructed to rotate for increased width, as well as depth. Doing that was painful, and we'd have to shower as well. Showering hurt, a lot. My bathroom was a bloody mess at all times. The cleaner regularly had to mop up my blood and piss. And sometimes sheets. My surgeon showed me photos of my surgery on the last day. I think he just loved his job or something. He showed me all of what he had done to me, gore included, and handed me a USB flash drive with a copy of the evidence. Excellent. I left with very little fanfare. I had jettisoned nearly all of my clothes, mostly purchased just before the trip to match local fashion. I needed space for all the dilators, lube, condoms, piss mats, and various other gear that I'd need for my recovery at home. I left my room in a complete mess. I did leave a note for the cleaning lady saying, you can have my stuff. Because she was nice. Anyway, my friends came back to say goodbye that day. They only found my discarded clothing. I messaged them later to say, yeah, you know, I was late for my flight. But they had served their purpose. One of them would annoy me occasionally by calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning to recount the story. We'd just wax lyrical about all of the times we'd shared in Thailand, and she'd also tell me about her family from time to time, which annoyed me. Totally normal woman who I had no interest in whatsoever. She was nice, and, you know, I was polite on the phone, but I eventually just stopped returning her calls. One of them, I did also install a PlayStation 2 mod chip for one of them. I was apparently a vegan, so still a vegan, so I got my meal first on the return flights. I'd eaten nothing but shrimp and prawns and whatever else while I was in Thailand. I once made up during breakfast what I referred to as a full Thai breakfast. Basically just the trough of everything, which is essentially what a full English breakfast is, protein-wise. Anyway, so I'm sitting here on the plane, and they give me my meal first, like before everyone else, because I had selected vegan food for the return flight as well. Yeah, very funny story. The Buddhist monk sign at the airport also amused me. there was a special reserved VIP lane just for Buddhist monks at the Bangkok airport. My Australian friends and I also kept in touch, somehow. My one regret was that I never did get to try fried crickets. There was a market stall near us that sold, because in Asian countries they often eat like fried insects. I really wanted to try it, and I was really annoyed because I was really tired that day. I just couldn't go out. That was the same day I sat in the sofa and cried and wanted to go to a convenience store instead. But I digress. In spite of any overly dramatic representation here and my general mania during that month, this was one of the best, most happiest periods of my life. I remember it fondly. I genuinely enjoyed myself in Thailand. You know, I enjoyed the friends that I made there. I didn't talk to them afterwards, but, you know, I really just did have fun for a month. I was there for a month in pain, so I made the most of it. I mean, I did talk to him a little bit afterwards, but not that, you know, it was like not the same. I felt relaxed the whole time. I had very little anxiety of any kind. It really just did feel like I was back in school. I had no pressure on me whatsoever in any way. You know, everything was controlled. The clinic did everything, and I just ate meals every day, and just, yeah, I mean, it was great. I did miss it after I got home, you know, talking to all of them. I think, though, that if I'd continued staying there for much longer, that the novelty would have probably worn off. The place that I stayed at in Thailand was a boring industrial district, and I still treated it like I was on holiday. I had a Facebook account at the time that I'd used for my local Labour Party activism, but I resigned my membership while I was in Thailand. I did it purely on a whim, inspired by my friend who was in the Communist Party. I posted the photos of my surgery being performed to my Facebook account, which my Labour Party colleagues still followed. My account was immediately banned, which amused me. I mean, I didn't really need the account anymore anyway. I also posted the photos to my blog in an article titled, "I Had the Balls to Do This," because I'm very funny and talented. It ended up being posted for shock value by other people on various right-wing forums, and I was once told by someone that they saw it while they were in class at college. I'm smiling in the article, and without warning, it just starts showing my balls being removed and my entire crotch just being cut up and spliced. A friend on IRC told me that I was insane. She told me that it was positively deranged and that I would post such private photos. I just found it funny. I just did it on a whim when I was bored in Thailand before I flew home. I found it funny when people found it so horrifying, because to me it just looked like routine surgery. You know, I was proud. I just wanted to show my pictures. It was something that gave me total inner peace that I'd never known previously. Like, I was happy for the first time in my life. My surgeon was a genius.